Welcome to another episode of Credit to the Girls. I'm Lucy, and I'm here with my co-host, Sarah Black.
I was wondering if you wanted me to jump in again like I did last week.
I know, well, you know, you never give me the joy of being able to introduce you, Sarah, so I'm glad I got to do it this week. But how are you? We were just talking about how it's been, once again, another busy week.
It's been such a busy week. That's what everyone's always like, oh, you know, grand final's finished. What do you even do now? And I'm like, well, you know, we go straight into the combine.
Yep.
So Monday was sort of like a bit of a celebration day, end of season thing, and then spent all of Tuesday and Wednesday at Etihad Stadium for the AFLW Combine.
Excuse me?
With you.
It's called Marvel Stadium now?
They haven't changed all the signage over yet.
Yeah. It's all blank now.
There is a lot of signage to change over. Like, yeah. They've changed stuff, some of the stuff in the car park underground, which is cool.
Love a good car park sign.
Exactly the sort of content people come to listen to.
Well, I just wanted to correct you just in case it happens again. But as I said, I may be seen out. So it's just Docklands forever, you know?
Yep.
Hashtag Docklands forever.
Yep.
So we were down at Marvel Stadium Tuesday. There was not a lot happening. It was more like interviews, sort of medical testing and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And then Tuesday was when the Wednesday was when the real action went down.
Yeah. Yep. As someone who had a fairly busy Monday celebrating, I was I was quite relieved that Tuesday was comparatively quiet. Wednesday was flat out. Watching all the physical testing and a lot of interviews, of which we're going to bring you some, which is super exciting.
Yeah, we have a bit of audio from four of the draft's, like, top prospects.
Yep.
Two you'll have heard plenty of. Two that we've... Lauren Baller we haven't spoken a lot about from Queensland.
No, a little bit, but not much.
Not much, but Elise Parker has definitely been mentioned on the show a few times, especially with Caitlin Arnold joining us a few weeks ago as well. So you get to hear from them in a minute. But it was dominated by the Victorians, all of the top sort of test results. Not again this year, because I feel like there was a few wild cards last year.
Last year, I was looking over the results. It was sort of the Jess and Jazz show with Jess Allen and Jazz Hewitt really, really coming through with their test results. But this year, yeah, definitely was dominated by the Vics. Saying that, there weren't too many interstaters. We're saying interstaters because we're from Victoria. interstaters actually testing. There are a few girls who are sick or injured. There were only... 12 to begin with, 14 if you count the Haynes twins. And, yeah, with a few girls not actually testing, that sort of drops the numbers down a bit and makes it a bit easier for the Victorian girls to dominate.
To dominate, yeah, exactly. Because there's 36 and if 24 of them are already Victorian and then a couple don't test, then you're probably going to have the old Victorian bias, which we are not falling victim to. It's just the way that it's worked out this time around.
Yeah.
But so what tests were there? We have standing vertical jump, running vertical jump, which you do with both hands?
Yeah, so there's one each. So you do it from your right side and then you do it from your left side. And they measure them separately.
There's
20-metre sprint, the yo-yo, which was nowhere near as exciting as I thought it was. I was sitting with Laura Kane at the time just having a chat and the yo-yo started and I just said something like, oh... this is a bit boring.
Yeah.
And she just burst out laughing. She's like, of course it's boring.
Yeah.
It's a physical test. Which it's just basically like the beep test, but you get a bit of a break in the middle. You sort of walk to a certain distance and walk back again, just a couple of metres. And it's meant to replicate that sort of running and then sort of dropping back to a walk that you do in footy over and over again.
Like the repeat efforts of
the one.
Like football that you have to do. And as someone who has done the yo-yo test once, it's not fun, and it is very hard.
Yep.
And we were talking about this off air, but I find the stopping and starting, some people do really well at it, others find it really hard. I'm one of those people. I'm one of those people where they're like, just run 2 kilometres as fast as you can, and I'm like, cool, I can do that, but don't make me stop and start. That's hard.
Yeah.
So two different tests, they're the two different tests to test aerobic capacity, and then there's also the agility test.
Yes.
As well. Records broken as well. This combine,
yes,
I saw Emerson Woods was one of them
in the 20-meter sprint. no real surprise, she is super quick. So she brought the record down to 3.129 off the top of my head, which is absolutely lightning.
Yeah.
Lightning fast. She's a Vic Metro girl. Emerson, so
Hawthorn premiership player as well.
Yes, as the Hawthorn fans were very quick to remind me on Twitter, which is great to see that they're really on board with their girls. And the other records that were broken were by one Nina Morrison. It was Nina's combine. Let's be honest.
It was Nina's combine. She absolutely smashed it, and I think a lot of people maybe not doubting the number one pick, especially with Metro.
Yeah.
Nominations and all of that, but with this results and the results that she's posted in this combine, she's sort of like the Jasmine Hewitt of last year, where they've just popped up in the top 5 or 10 in every single test.
Yeah.
The only difference is Jasmine Hewitt was relatively unknown for a lot of people, and those
coming from Darwin's
and those results sort of made people sit up and take notice of her. But with Morrison, I think it's people sitting up and taking notice of how good she is, and how much of an athlete and how much she has to offer.
Yeah. There are a few people sort of with raised eyebrows when they'd sort of ask me, oh, you know, is Maddie Prespakis going to go at number one? This is way before zones were introduced. Mm. And I'd sort of go, maybe, but I've just, there's this girl who plays for Geelong Falcons, Nina Morrison, and I've just got a feeling about her. And as the years progressed, she has just absolutely firmed into contention as the number one pick. And she actually confirmed yesterday for the first time that she will be nominating for the Geelong Zone. So good news, Cats. She's pretty much, I'd say, 99.9% sure that she will go to Geelong. Whether that's pick one or two, I don't know.
Yeah,
so I imagine pick one, but, you know, you don't want to
jump to
conclusions.
I imagine pick one, but let's throw now to Nina Morrison herself, who spoke yesterday at the Combine about her season, sort of what kind of player she is and, you know, how she wanted to show off her aerobic attributes as well, but also there's her dropping the news that she had just nominated for the Geelong region.
Been really good. If nothing else, it's pretty good to opportunity just to catch up with everyone else from around Victoria and the other states, so it's a good opportunity just to meet with everyone. Obviously, with all the clubs being here, it's easy for them to interview anyone that they need to. And, yeah, the fitness testing, so it's been pretty good.
Do you learn a bit as well?
I think all the camps that you go on, these sort of ones, gives you a good opportunity to be exposed to more sort of elite environment. And, yeah, I think that's really helpful.
Totally smashed the yo-yo test today. Was that something you'd set yourself?
Yeah, well, obviously, that sort of endurance running is a big part of my game. So that was one that I was, like, looking to do pretty well in. So, yeah, I was really happy with how I went.
A lot of talk about number one pick. Nina, how does it feel that it could potentially be you in a few weeks' time?
It's a weird thing to think about, but I guess, like, especially earlier in the year, it's not something that you take too seriously. Just sort of push to the back of the mind and just focus on playing good footy. So, yeah, it's not something that I'm really too worried about. But if it happens, it happens, and yeah, it'd be exciting, I guess.
Are you able to say which zone you've nominated for?
I've nominated for the Geelong zone.
So there's Nina yesterday at the draft combine, sort of, you know, talking about how she wanted to do really well on that aerobic exercise, but also that she's nominated just for the Geelong region, which, as we said, very good news if you're a Cats fan. We'll hear more about her when we play our interview with our guest, Ben Waller, who's the list manager for Geelong's AFLW team. But another girl who stood out, one of the interstaters that stood out, was Lauren Bella, who did very well in showing off her ruck prowess in the physical tests.
Yeah, so Lauren's been around for a little while now. She's from sort of more far north Queensland, if you'd call Cairns far north. I think it's Cairns. She's from up that way, definitely.
I think it's Mackay.
Mackay, okay, yeah. That sounds right, Mackay, and she finished school at the end of last year, and she's moved down to study at Bond University on the Gold Coast, and has been part of the Gold Coast Academy as a consequence, and really sort of devoted herself to her footy. This is something she really wants, really, really wants to play at AFLW level. She'd almost be a certainty to go to the Lions, I imagine. Mm. She's 188 centimetre ruck. Really good head on her shoulders, did really well in the time trial. No, didn't quite make the top five, but ran incredibly well, as did Reen Karras, another ruck, with sort of Michelle Klein, the AFLW publicity woman, and I was sort of standing there watching it going, where are all these rucks coming from? Who can run like that?
Yeah.
It's a really promising sign for the future.
They must be inspired by the sort of the ruck work we're seeing in the men's game, where
it's a new breed.
Yeah, you're not just there to tap the ball at a stoppage. You're there to do everything else as well. But I was definitely struck by Lauren's sort of the way that she carried herself. She was very confident, which I really, really liked. And also, she just seemed, she wanted to be there. She wanted to do really well, and she was excited. And I really liked that energy from her. Also, and she was a netballer, a keen netballer who played state level as well, I found out.
That
doing
does
my
not
reading.
Surprise me.
Exactly. So it's not surprising she has all these sort of attributes that you think would lend her to being a very good player, being in the ruck, tall, all that sort of thing. And also, netballers always seem to be very enthusiastic about things. So it doesn't surprise me either. But Lauren fronted the media on Tuesday alongside Maddie. Let's hear from her now talking about her journey through the Gold Coast Suns Academy, and sort of she starts off talking about how her season's been.
It's been a pretty long, hard season, but I've been, you know, keeping up with it, just trying to go through the motion and get until this point. It was a pretty incredible experience, particularly with the win over Vic Metro. So that was a pretty exciting time for all of us. But under 18 nationals has always been a great experience for me, and particularly the girls. It's always been a massive bonding thing, and we did pretty well this year.
Being a Queenslander, following someone like Sabrina Frederick-Traub and how aggressive she's in the ruck, has she been an inspiration for you?
Absolutely. I've always looked up to her. She's always been a fantastic role model for me, and particularly other girls as well. And I've been lucky enough to, you know, chat to her personally, and she's let me know, like, given me advice sort of thing. So she's definitely a good person to look up to.
Gone down to the Gold Coast and being part of their academy and played in the winter series, what's it been like getting that AFL being in that AFL environment?
Yeah, it's been really good, considering I've come from a rural area in North Queensland. I've been able to move down kind of into the big smoke and just be in the thick of it and, you know, get extra training. There's a lot more facilities, and that's just been great to experience it. And the winter series program has been awesome development for under 18s girls as well as other girls that are hoping to be AFLW drafted.
How'd you find those games, the series, playing against AFLW listed players?
It was a big step up. There's definitely a clear level difference between the both of them, but it was a really incredible experience. You know, I got to go out and run on with some of the AFLW players, so couldn't ask for any more.
So that you're good friends with Ariana Clark, who was drafted last year to the Brisbane Lions. Have you followed her journey and gotten some advice from her during this time?
Yeah, so Ari and I pretty much grew up doing our football journey together, and she's definitely been an inspiration for me, just to watch somebody my age and experience and that sort of thing go through the exact same program that I have. And she has been very successful, and she had an awesome season, and I've been lucky to play with her in my club team, so she's always there. I'm lucky to be able to get advice from her.
A disappointment that the Suns don't yet have a team for the draft age.
Yeah, it is. It's we're lucky that it's coming in, but you know, you'd like for all the teams to be in right now. But yeah,
is there enough talent in Queensland to support two teams, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, and the for under 18s championships, us beating Vic Metro, that just kind of goes to show, like, it proves that you know, you don't have to be in Victoria to be able to succeed well in footy, but yeah.
Why do you think Queensland women's footy is relatively, compared to men's, it's so strong?
It's just a great sport. It's been organised well. The actual feeling you get from playing with the girls there, everybody's positive. It's just a really great sport to be in, and I think the reputation in Queensland for it, it's just getting stronger as well. So, you know, like, we're getting recruitments and picking up supporters all along the way.
Combine testing the next 2 days. Is it a daunting experience?
Absolutely. I've been excited leading up to this week, but I'm starting to feel the nerves now. Obviously, it's a very daunting experience, as it's a pretty big stadium and there's lots of tests and lots of people as well. But at the end of the day, we're all just here to kind of show what we've got and try our best.
I imagine the vertical jump would be one you've got your eyes on excelling
at. Yeah, that's always been the one that I've done all right at. But yeah, it just as terrified for all the other tests, though.
So Lauren Ballard there chatting to the media before she did all of her testing on Tuesday. One of my favourite moments from that interview is when she just gave that resolute yes to there being enough talent in Queensland to support two teams.
Yeah, I was standing next to Dan Cherney when he asked that question, and he almost physically recoiled a little bit. It was like, all right.
There's enough. Okay.
But it sort of backs up what we've been saying for a little while now, that there is the talent in Queensland.
And as she said, the winner of the Vic Metro earlier this year at the Under-18 Champs, that was a really big breakthrough moment for all of them. And the Suns, which I know you've talked a lot about, have a very good program down there, giving a lot of girls a bit of hope in like making an AFL dream come alive.
Yeah, the win was definitely more momentous for Queensland than it was for Vic Metro. I think it was almost, like, it's not a watershed moment, that's overstating it a little bit, but it gave some belief, I think, that you know, they can compete on the biggest stage, which we've seen anyway. The Lions have been the most successful team over the past 2 years, hands down. So, they'll be adding Lauren Bella. She spoke about the vertical jump. She didn't finish in the top five of the standing jump. She sort of loses a bit of an advantage there because her height's so big to begin with. But the running vertical jump, she finished fourth on the right-hand side with a jump of 59 centimetres, and for the left-hand side, again fourth with 65 centimetres.
Which is a big jump for someone when they're, like, already that tall.
Yes. Yeah, so add that on to a 188 frame and you've got 240, 50-odd maths.
Yep. Yeah. It's a good, like, getting up about 2 metres high, which, you know, and Brisbane are looking for... I hate when people say Brisbane and I just did it. Brisbane are looking for, you know, a very confident and good ruck at the moment. So Craig Starcevich and Bree Brock must be very excited about hopefully landing Lauren in the draft.
And then holding on to her, which will be another challenge with Gold Coast coming in 2020. It's an interesting element, and we'll see it over in the West as well with West Coast being introduced, whether there'll be a bit of a change over out of girls coming out of Frio. They've got a new coach this year, so a bit of a changing dynamic, I think, over the summer. So hopefully for the better for the Dockers.
Hopefully for the better for the Dockers. Another top draft pick, Maddie Prest-Parkis. She sort of middled out in every kind of test, didn't she? Didn't blow the testers away or get mind-changing results or anything. But I think her strength has always been the way that she plays, and watching her play is where, you know, her value comes from. And I don't think, you know, maybe an underwhelming performance at this combine will do anything to hurt the fact that she will be a top pick.
No, not at all. And I think we've devoted all this time speaking about the physical testing, and now we're just sort of going to contradict it a bit by saying it's not the be-all and end-all. It's just one element. There were also skill testing the night before on the Tuesday night, and everyone's seen a lot of Maddie play, and they've seen a lot of her play at VFLW level as well, like not just the under-18 stuff where she's dominated. She's also done well against women who are much bigger than her. Maddie's not that tall. But what she is incredibly competitive.
Yeah.
And that, you know, there's something a bit different from running around an oval to see ball, get ball, which is her biggest strength.
Yeah, for sure. And I think in these combines, the tests more so, it's yours not necessarily to lose ground, but there's heaps of ground that can be made up by performing well.
Yeah.
Like, you're not necessarily going to, you know, drop 10 draft spots because you did very badly. You're more likely to gain 10 if you perform really well.
Especially with the girls. I think the guys, there's a little bit more pressure involved just because there's so many of them. But for the girls, you've got a little bit more leeway, and they haven't necessarily had the experience or the expectation that the boys have had of, okay, this is what I want to aim for the combine, and they've been aiming for that since they were 13. Yep. When these girls were 13, you know, some of them weren't even playing. So, bit of context.
And Maddie talks about that in the interview that we are just about to play you, when Maddie spoke to the media on the first day of the combine. She also gave us a little bit of background as to why she chose to nominate for just Vic Metro.
So it's been a good season. A few different teams coming through. So I played in Cold Cannons in the TAC Cup season, and then from there I went to Vic Metro, played Nationals up in Gold Coast, and then from there was fortunate enough to get picked in the All-Stars and represented Victoria in the All-Stars game in Adelaide. And then from there as well, I played a few VFL games this year. So been full on, but it's been an exciting year.
How have you found the jump up to VFLW level?
For me, the jump up to VFLW level, I thought it was pretty tough the first game. I think the physicality for me and just the bigger bodies and very fast-paced game was very hard for me. But I think after, you know, once the ball went up and I got hit a few times, I was pretty, I think I adapted well to the strength and all that sort of side of the game. So, yeah, I enjoyed my VFL season and I can't wait for more senior games.
Plenty of accolades in your first seasons at all levels. How does it feel to, you know, come off a season like that and win some awards?
It's pretty humbling. I mean, to get those accolades, it sort of shows me that my hard work has paid off in a way. And, yeah, I'm very proud of myself in a way, but very humbled. I think, you know, for me, I've always just wanted to play footy and I just love footy. So those awards come throughout, but for me, I just love playing footy.
Is there any player that you've modelled your game on, whether that be AFLW or AFL?
For AFL, probably someone like Nathan Fyfe and or Emma Carney from AFLW. So players like that, they're pretty tough inside when they're around the ball, but I feel like when I'm outside I can damage as well. So yeah, a bit of those players.
You played alongside Emma Carney at Melbourne Uni. Has she mentored you at all during the season?
Yeah, she's helped me a lot throughout in ways where she moves through the midfield and how she manages a tagger. There was a few times where I had to deal with getting a tag and she just sort of showed me my way around that. And, yeah, she's been really good to me and I've got to train with her for the past few years so at Melbourne Uni. And I think, yeah, she's a terrific role model and, yeah, definitely someone I look up to.
How inspiring is the first 2 years of AFLW been for your journey in particular?
It's probably a big goosebump feeling. I remember watching the first game and there was a few tears. I think for a lot of us girls growing up, like myself, I played with the boys and when I finished playing with the boys, that was probably the hardest time of my life. I didn't know what to do after that. I didn't really know girls footy. And then when I jumped into girls footy and they said there's an AFLW, just straight away, just gave me goosebumps and a butterfly sort of feeling. So for me, the past three years, I've just been working super hard to get where I am today and hopefully it all pays off at the end of the year.
How thankful are you that this is this great pathway now to AFLW in particular?
Oh, I think like everyone else speaking, very thankful that, you know, it's happened to us and we have the exact same opportunities and experiences the boys can have. And I think the way they're treating us is exactly like the boys and I think it's all directed in a good path.
You've nominated for Melbourne Metro. Can you talk us through that decision?
Yeah, I've been asked that a few times, obviously leading up to nominations, where I was going to head and stuff like that. And it was a very hard decision. It came down to the last minute and I think it was just something I sat down with my manager and parents about. And for me, it was just where I'm going to feel most comfortable and came down to the closer I am to home, the better I play. So for nominating Metro, it was definitely the best option for me. And yeah, I'm excited just to stay at home and play good footy.
That was Maddie Press-Parkis, the former, you would say former number one draft pick favourite, but then
yes, fell. Yes, technically correct.
Technically correct, but then Melbourne Metro will put her at number three. But she sort of, this year it's been Nina and Maddie. Last year it was Chloe and Malloy and Isabel Huntington. It's sort of the same sort of deal this year, but with the extra regions, we will probably see Maddie go down to Carlton.
Yep.
And an interesting observation with that was the Carlton media team were there for that press conference with Maddie and were recording that interview. And I'm sorry if I got my ugly head in the frame because I think I was standing in front of her.
Yeah, well, actually, just to add to that, I tweeted that little observation out and I got a retweet from Nicole Graves, who's the head of women's football at Carlton. So there you are, the plot thickens. Not that it's much of a plot. I think it's a bit of a given, to be honest.
Yes, I think so too.
And so then that leaves Collingwood with the next pick.
Yeah.
So one that could be on the radar is Tyler Hanks.
Yep.
Did incredibly well with the agility. I mistakenly said she broke Ruby Blair's record earlier today. She did not. That was my fault. I was looking at the data and I'm like, oh, a lower score must mean better. No.
No.
Didn't realise it was measured in seconds. There was no unit given. My bad. Sorry, Ruby. You still got your record.
You still, yeah. You got your record in our hearts.
Tyler did.
Yeah.
And someone else who did really well is Sophie van der Heuvel.
I was about to say that. Sophie van der Heuvel is another one to keep an eye on. Williamstown VFLW player this year, as well as playing for Vic Metro? Vic Country.
Vic Country, yeah, because she's a, what do they call them, GMW Rebels?
Oh, yeah, Rebels, yeah.
I'm just making up letters now where I'm just bringing up my thing. GWV Rebels, yeah, Greater Western Victoria.
Yeah. That is the one. And she sort of has a little bit come out of nowhere. State cricketer, as well as
Academy member.
Academy
AFL,
member.
AFLW Academy member. Asta's a huge rap.
Yeah.
Loves it.
Did Asta not use the term bolter for her, or was that for Tyler Hanks?
No, I imagine it would have been Sophie, not Tyler. I can't quite remember her saying it, but that fits more better with Sophie, I think.
Mm. And having watched a few Williamstown games, particularly the one against Melbourne Uni, the last game of the season, Sophie puts in a very good case for being a high draft pick. She was always got a lot of the ball and used it smartly and was, you know, one of the better players on the Williamstown team, which unfortunately finished bottom of the ladder in the VFLW, but she was definitely one
second
of
the last.
Second last, that's right. She was one of the shining lights this season.
Yep, I only know that because I've spent a whole day doing Danielle Ponta's profile, draft profile, and I've spent poring over Essendon's season.
Oh, of course,
yeah.
Essendon, yeah.
Yep.
So, sorry, Williamstown. Sorry, Essendon as well. But no, Sophie or Tyler, you can imagine them.
Sophie
growing.
Also plays taller than she actually is. Mm. We were surprised. We were looking at her results, you know, jump and stuff like that, and you said, oh, how tall is she? And she's 171, but which surprised both of us.
Yeah. I was expecting you to say at least like
178 or
something around there. Yeah. But, yeah, when you put out that she was only, 177, I was like, wow. For a smallish player to get a vertical jump that high,
yes,
that's a big plus. That's a very big plus when we know already that she's a very good player.
Yeah.
But I think other players that sort of, you know, came out of nowhere, Lauren Butler as well, another G Great and Western Victoria Rebel. Tyler Hanks that we mentioned.
Eleanor Brown put in an absolutely cracking 2K time trial. Really burnt off everyone, including Press Packers. And she's quite an athletic defender who's been playing for Vic Metro. Really bright red hair. You sort of can't miss her. Just really great reach and a great rebound defender.
I know who you're talking about. I commentated at a Southern Saints game.
Yeah.
And she was very, very good down there on half back. Another one that did quite well in a few was Rebecca Webster as well.
Yeah, she's been a good key defender for a little while now, coming from the Marion Bush Rangers up the top of Victoria. A bit smaller than you'd think, again, 165 centimetres. Another one who is much taller is Charlotte Wilson, Eastern Rangers girl, 177 centimetres. Charlotte did really well placing high in the vertical jumps, running vertical jumps, standing vertical jump. She won that one. And I think she was... the sprint. That's where she came third in the sprint. So another one to look out for Victoria.
And one we mentioned before was also Emerson Woods.
Yes.
Who I think has built another one player who's built a strong case.
Yeah.
This combine.
Yeah, Emmy's a great girl. She's she had a bit of a sort of like... She was quite unwell in the under-18 champs. So she wasn't quite playing to her potential. Really, really... Not only is she quick, she's a fierce tackler, really, really fierce, good link player, knows where to run. I think that's the key. You can be as fast as you want, but if you're running in the wrong spot or sort of leading in the wrong position, then you're not much use at all.
Yeah.
But Emerson has really come on in leaps and bounds. She only started playing in 2016, so she's got a fair bit of development still to come, but that's a promising sign.
Yep, and as we said, all of these girls we mentioned are Victorians. And we're not purposely doing that.
No.
We promise. But tell us a bit about some of the South Australian, Northern Territory, New South Wales, Queensland
Everyone else?
Everyone else.
Yeah.
WA players. And Libby Haynes was a player from Tasmania who finished in the top five as
well.
Yeah,
Libby did really well. Her twin sister Chloe was unwell, so she didn't test. But those two would be bound for North Melbourne, almost almost lock that in, I reckon. Former basketballers, pretty raw.
Yeah.
But a lot of very competitive girls.
Yeah.
And Libby is surprisingly quick for her height.
Mm.
Got a great reach and a great jump, did really well. Moving on to some of the other states, Jazz Hewitt from WA did quite well in the running. In the running tests, she's a small mid. Sabrina Duffy has the most unorthodox running style I've ever seen, but she gets it done. And I spoke to Trent Cooper at some stage, and he said that Sabrina's biggest asset is how competitive she is.
Mm.
So she may not look like the most attractive runner, but put her next to someone in a race, and she is absolutely determined to win it.
To win it, yeah.
Yeah. Mackenzie Dowrick did okay, sort of middling, I think, in a lot of the tests. Good natural jump, Mackenzie, but her biggest asset is, of course, her kicking, which we didn't see. That was on another night.
Yeah.
So I'm sure she dominated there. Danielle Ponta didn't test. Caitlin Rosenweig was okay. She's really dominated the Sandful W and the Sawful this year. Picked up a whole stack of awards. She's a really natural forward.
Yep.
Nikki Gore was, again, middling runner. Jackie Yawson did quite well in the yo-yo. She was really determined. It was good to see from a key forward who really sort of stuck it out. She's from Queensland. Nat Grider is a really natural runner, defender from Queensland. We've already spoken about Lauren. Elise Parker didn't actually test.
Yep.
And she's someone we'll come to in a second. And the two other New South Wales girls, Brianna McFarlane and Alexia Hamilton, were both quite strong as well. So there you are.
So there we are. There's the interstaters now. And you just mentioned Elise Parker. She didn't test because of a hamstring complaint, she told us.
I think they're just being ultra cautious with her. She's had a big year of footy, so which we're about to hear about.
Which, understandably, you would be a bit cautious.
Oh, God.
These girls have played so much football this year.
And if there was a national draft like the boys, I'd be really interested to see where Elise would go.
I have thought that
up against Nina and Maddie. It'd be really intriguing because she will come in and have a Chloe Malloy like impact, I reckon.
I think she's one of the players that's sort of been forgotten about in this sort of Vic region, like in the region sort of talk, because from all the reports, it's Nina, Maddie, and Elise. Should be the conversation for the top three. It's as in terms of top three players in the draft.
Loosely, So GWS, their first pick won't come until pick 12, which is a bit of a shame because she deserves the honour of having a really high pick.
Yeah.
But, you know, she's a really switched on girl. She's really bright. She'll know that.
Yeah.
It's all good.
It's all good. She knows what's coming. But let's have a listen to what Elise had to say on Wednesday, second day of testing. She spoke to the media.
Yeah, I'm very much a midfielder who loves to get as much ball as I can. Very competitive around the source, and just love the hands out and getting it forward as quick as I can. But also love along the half back too, just being able to see the game open up just along that half back. So yeah, I like to think of myself as a mid and half back.
Have enjoyed this year. The chance of being drafted comes up in a few weeks' time, but it's been a long sort of 18th year.
Yeah, it's been absolutely incredible. Obviously, being at the draft and the combine is an experience in itself, but the whole journey up until here and coming through the New South Wales pathway, it's been so exciting and opened up so many opportunities, not only as a footballer, but as a person as well, and it's definitely developed myself, not only as a footballer, but, as my person.
What does these few days do for the competitive side of you?
Yeah, it definitely brings it out in a way. Obviously, we're all here as one team and here to support each other. But at the same time, we're trying to achieve our best results and do the best that we personally can. But being competitive definitely helps things like these.
You mentioned what sort of footballer you are. Who do you admire?
Oh, I'd have to say Alicia Eva. Being lucky enough to be my coach this year, I look up to her in every way, not only as a player but as a person as well. And how she plays on the field, she's commended for her strengths, and I definitely try to mirror myself as much as I can off her skills.
Playing for the Giants South in the Winter Series, that give you a good taste of senior footy?
Yeah, definitely. It was an awesome experience playing against, especially the Brisbane Lions in a way. They were very much the AFLW side in the likes of Sabrina. It was, yeah, experience in itself, and it definitely helped me and built my confidence, I guess, against bigger bodies, especially coming out of the state pathway and then off the back of nationals.
And you combine the last few days. Did you test today?
No, I actually didn't. No.
All good?
Yeah, just a bit of a hamstring issue in the past, and it's not quite 100%, but should be soon.
So that was Elise Parker from New South Wales chatting there on the second day of the combine. And I think we've just about covered it all now, haven't we?
Yeah, that's everything.
That's everything.
That's surely everything. Yeah. I don't know. We maybe could give it a little bit of a feel as to what the combine was like.
True.
So held at Marvel, there's sort of like a roped off section that we were allowed in. The security guards were very stringent about being on the ground.
That surface.
Very stringent. Surface must be protected at all costs. And there's a lot of club people around, obviously, watching the testing, interviewing players. The players sort of have rest areas where they can just hang out. They sort of open up the big rooms. The boys are there at the same time. They have this air hockey machine that drives me up the wall.
There was all this pinging all the time, like pinging
all
noises.
All the time. I'm now transcribing interviews that I've done, and all I can hear in the background is ping, 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 ping. It's just...
It's a lot.
Yeah.
But we are going to bring you a bit more from the combine now, because we spoke to Ben Waller from Geelong's AFLW team. He is their list manager, and he was kind enough to take about 15 minutes of his time to have a good chat to us at Marvel Stadium. And it was good to get a bit of a background look at Geelong, sort of in the way that we did with Laura with North.
Yeah, definitely. Ben's also a listener of the show.
Yes.
So that was lovely to find out. We've got a few people at Geelong who listen to the show, so thank you.
Yeah, shout out to Geelong AFLW.
Yeah, and we hope we don't say anything that you're just sort of going, what the hell, I've got no idea what they're talking about. It's a bit of pressure on us now.
It is. It is a lot of pressure. But here is Ben chatting to us about all things Geelong AFLW. We're very happy to have Ben Waller from Geelong's AFLW recruiting team with us on Credit to the Girls. Part of the recruiting team, but also a listener of Credit to the Girls. Thank you so much, Ben, for joining us.
No, I enjoy the show. As I was mentioning before, that I used the show last week as part of my therapy after the VFLW Grand Final, so I enjoyed tuning in, but enjoy the show.
We love hearing things like that. We think all of the Geelong AFLW team is a bit a fans of the show, which is exciting for us.
I think because everything AFLW is so new to all of us, we try to get as much as we can. And we're still learning very much about the women's football space. So, we try to tune in whenever we can.
Amazing. Well, we're here sitting in a room at what is now Marvel Stadium at the combine. There's the rookies, you said, Sarah?
Yeah, the rookies are testing now. The boys got the evening. It's been pretty hectic here for the last few days. But I think what we'll start with is, Ben, if you could just tell us about your involvement in Geelong. How long have you been involved with the Cats and then the girls specifically?
Yeah, I've actually been at the Geelong Footy Club since 2001. Started many years ago at the Cattery. Started in the area of more football technology, so video and stats, but then worked into more football operations. So I managed our VFL men's team for 13 years and played a role in growing that program. And then in the last couple of years, in my involvement in our AFL men's program, one of my projects has been to help with our submissions, I suppose, around our AFLW licence and obtaining that. And now, since we got our licence, obviously last October, a big part of that role has been putting together our AFLW squad for 2019, of which our VFL women's program has played such an important role.
You guys missed out on the AFLW licence the first time around. What was that like at the time, and what was the reset sort of for you guys in getting the license in that second sort of offer?
It was disappointing at the time. We put a lot of work into it. We thought we put a really good case forward, but to be honest, looking back now, it was a bit of a blessing in disguise. At the time, women's footy was such a new thing in Geelong. There's a wonderfully strong culture down there, local football, local netball, but really women's footy was probably lagging a bit behind. I think at the time we talked about, the top 200, 250 players in Australia, there was only three of them from the Geelong region, so we knew that was going to be, if we did get a license the first time around, we probably would have had to bring most of our players from outside of Geelong. So yeah, been able to have a couple of years now to work on it, develop our own talent, get players to jump over from other sport. It's actually worked out for the best in many ways. We feel like we're going to be better prepared to enter the AFLW competition, compete and have a team that's actually truly representative of the Geelong region.
Yeah, and it's something that's been quite noticeable about the Cats in comparison to North Melbourne coming into the AFLW is the amount of resources you've put into your VFLW side.
Yeah, I think we did a little bit of work early days with North Geelong Magpies.
Yep.
They did a wonderful job for a number of years in terms of, you know, keeping the dream alive, I suppose, for many female players in the region. And once they had that first year in the VFLW competition, so we did a little bit of work with them early on, and then we thought the best way to develop our own talent was probably to follow a little bit of the model of our VFL men's team, is to bring that VFL team into our club, obviously give the players access to our facilities, make sure we had some really good coaching around them, really good resources, provide them with help off the field, and yeah, that's obviously led to where we are today.
You've answered this question already, but local players has seemed such a focus for Geelong, and on Sarah's very well looked after spreadsheet that she has of the players, all of the players or a majority of the players for Geelong, their past club are all Geelong Falcons or somewhere in that region. Why was it so important to use local talent and also to develop all of these girls into this pathway?
I think for a number of reasons. Probably one of them is the reality is AFLW at the moment is still very much part-time, as you know. A lot of the training's done after hours, night-time commitments. So we knew that if we had, you know, the majority of the team having to travel or having to relocate, not only was it going to be a costly exercise, we're probably going to be every year going out and almost trying to source a new team and trying to get players to spend a lot of time on the road. So, but probably the other important part is that if people in Geelong are going to get behind our team, going to be passionate about it. I think it's probably shown with a lot of our side when we've got players who have come through the Geelong Falcons with our VFL men's and our AFL men's team, that if the players are actually representative of the region, and it's amazing how many players in our team, like, you know, you talk to people in the town who the players teach their kids or they live next door to them or they've got some sort of connection with some of the players. I think from that point of view, there's going to be so many people in Geelong that are going to get behind our AFLW side. You even saw that in the lead-up to the VFLW grand final. The amount of support we got locally from the Geelong Advertiser, from K-Rock. Sorry if I mentioned one of your competitors there, but just the passion that I suppose people had, particularly with our other sides not competing at that time of the year, it was just really exciting to see that, and I suppose get a little taste of that in the lead up to AFLW.
Yeah, I really noticed that going to the prelim final at Northport Oval, and it was I couldn't believe the amount of fans who had travelled. It was really significant.
Yeah, we've been lucky, and the VFL final series was such a wonderful lead into AFLW, obviously to play those games, those high stakes games, knockout finals, and as you said, get really good support at Port Melbourne. Yeah, it was great to see.
And fast forwarding a bit now, we're here at the Combine. You've had a lot of time with a lot of these girls now, the under-18s especially. Do you get much out of the Combine, or is this more for clubs, some of the other Victorian clubs like Melbourne and Bulldogs, who may not have had as much access?
I think we do get a lot out of it, but you're right, there's probably a bit more to be gained from some of the other teams that have, you know, got more of the players to interview. We feel like we've seen all the players here. Obviously, we had the chance to see them play in the TAC Cup, the National Championships, see them play some VFLW footy. So we feel like we know them as players. We've conducted a number of house visits with players. Obviously, you've already got some testing results, but I suppose what the Draft Combine does is just confirm some of those things that you need to know about players. And it is great to see the girls again, though, in an environment, an elite environment, with the other players that they've spent, you know, 2 or 3 years in programs with now, which is yeah, I think for a few of them, it's probably a little bit sad in some ways because it's coming to an end now, and it's sort of like they've been together for such a long period of time. But whenever we do spend time with the players, some of which will play for Geelong, some that won't, they are a terrific group of young girls.
We heard from Nina Morris that she has nominated for the Geelong region. A lot of people have said that she'll go number one. You probably cannot confirm, probably nor deny that. But how helpful has it been for you to have that sort of that different sort of area zoning in Victoria for your recruiting?
It's funny. I suppose we always would have asked to have got that region anyway, and you know, things like the Geelong option as part of our recruiting strategy and building towards AFLW. It's just been, I suppose, a coincidence in many ways that we've had some talented players that have come up throughout the region. And to be honest, looking at some of the young talent coming through at the Geelong Falcons and the underage programs, there's going to be a lot more talent come through in coming years. So, but yes, Nina, even Olivia Purcell, Demby Taylor, they're a talented group. We've had a number of the other Falcons play with us in the VFLW this year. The Geelong Falcons under Jason Armistead have done a terrific job that this season, obviously winning the TAC Cup Premiership, which is great. So, but probably the important thing with those girls has been able to bring them into our VFLW program. Obviously Nina played 4 games towards the end of the year, and Olivia played 5, and that's just been a wonderful way to, I suppose, one, give them experience at VFLW footy, get to try them maybe in different positions, but just to get to know them better as people and get to know their families and that sort of thing. So from that point of view, that's been a great part of the program this year.
And just finally on Nina, how can you describe her as a player to someone who hasn't seen her play?
I think anyone who saw the yo-yo test where she broke the draft combine record of 18-2 would acknowledge that she's an exceptional athlete. She often gets described as an outside midfielder, which has got a lot to do with her athletic attributes, but I think what Nina showed throughout her time in our program in the VFL finals is she's willing to go and win her own footy. She's very strong overhead, and she's a wonderful kick of the football. It's hard to find too many faults in her game at this point in time, which for someone who's only been playing the game for a couple of seasons is quite remarkable. I know she's got a couple of older brothers who have played some good footy as well, so you can tell that over the course of her life she spent plenty of time out in the backyard kicking the footy. And for her to make the, you know, to jump over from tennis and soccer to footy is a great thing for our club, and it's a great thing for AFLW that those types of athletes are now playing our game.
What about some of your mature aged recruits, such as Phoebe McWilliams, Julia Crocker-Gills, Mae McDonald, Rebecca Goring, Renee Garing? I always get their names
Goring
mixed.
Garing, yeah,
Goring,
yeah.
Garing, Rebecca, Renee. Some of those mature aged recruits that you've brought over who have AFLW experience and those that don't. Tell us a bit about a couple of those girls.
They're going to be crucial to what we're trying to achieve. That was a big part of our recruiting strategy is, yes, we wanted to get access to the best young talent. We wanted to develop players in our local region, but we also wanted to bring players in who had some AFLW experience. We weren't, you know, especially enough to acknowledge that we're just going to be able to go into AFLW with a team of players who haven't at least played some footy at the level. That's where players like Astra O'Connor, obviously Melissa Hickey and Phoebe, who we're not actually talking to at the moment since the VFLW Grand Final, but that's where those players are going to be really crucial. And even Meg McDonald, having that experience in the first year with the Bulldogs, she's taken to her game to a new level at VFLW this year with the Darebin Falcons. And even someone like Julia Crockett-Grills, who's had a couple of injury-interrupted seasons but had an outstanding year at Hawthorn in a really good footy program.
And just a thought on Melissa Hickey. Is she going to be right to play next year?
I think, obviously, you guys have probably spent a bit of time with Melissa over the journey and seen the way she trains and goes about her preparation and her recovery and her rehab. She's going to give herself every chance of being there when we first run out on GMHBA Stadium, hopefully in round one of the next season. I'm not giving you an exclusive there. I'm not sure of anything about the fixture yet, but look, Melissa will give herself every chance. She's going really well at the moment. She's just been a terrific person to bring into our program off field at the moment, and obviously hopefully on field she'll be able to help our young side develop.
Thank you so much, Ben, and I am honestly looking forward to a packed GMHBA stadium, or as we the ABC say, Cadinia Park, early in 2019. But do you reckon it'll be very, very packed out?
I think it will be. I think a lot of people, not surprised, because we know what the Geelong sporting public's like, but I think a lot of people in town will really get behind it. It's going to be exciting for that first game, and we're all really looking forward to it.
Excellent. Thanks, Ben. So good to chat to Ben about Geelong's AFLW team and learn a bit more about the process behind what they're doing. And as he mentioned, the mature age recruits that they've picked up over the last few months, he said, have been integral to what they're doing down at Geelong. And we've just spent a lot of time talking about the draft combine, and we've spoken about on previous episodes how this year they went for youth-focused draft combine. So it was only girls who attended the under-18 championships, whereas last year there was also those mature age players, which Ben also spoke about, to bring experience to teams as well. So what happens if you're one of those mature aged players, I say in quotation marks, because a lot of them, you know, you might be 22, 23, 24, not particularly old, but...
So younger than us.
So younger than us, yeah. But you just didn't get a chance to go to the under 18 champs.
We're middle-aged footballers now, Lucy.
I know, how weird is
it? We're coming into the prime of our careers.
It makes me so confused when they're like, he's getting old, and then you look at their age and they're like 28, and you're like, well, how old, like, what am I?
Yeah.
I'm not elderly, but...
You're almost closer to 26 than you are to 25.
Yeah, let's not talk about it.
But yeah, not mature age players, older players who weren't invited to the combine. Don't stress.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's just a sign of where the AFL wants the combine to go in the future. Very similar to the guys. It's youth focused, except for the... And then eventually they've brought in a separate state combine, which is sort of for those older players, the 22, 23-year-olds who haven't been picked up yet but are worth a shot. Mm. The girls, the depth isn't there yet. The number of players isn't there yet to have a separate, totally separate combine. But the coaches know who those players are who stand out at VFLW level.
Yeah.
I think we'll see, as we've seen last year, the first few rounds of the season, of the draft, be youth-focused.
Yep.
Just best young talent available, stockpile for the future, and then clubs will start looking at filling holes with some older players.
Those sort of very high performers in the state leagues and such.
Yeah.
You'll see them get
delisted picked. AFLW players.
Yep.
May get another shot. I'm talking Alyssa Mifsud because it still baffles me that she's not on an AFLW list.
Yep, and we saw it happen to Stephanie Kane last year with Fremantle. So I think, those older players, they're not out of the picture by any means.
Yes.
And I think we'll still, if a club has four picks, you'd probably see them use two on a younger players and two on mature players.
Yep, exactly right.
Is what you'll probably see. So it's not all said and done. But also, if you're an older player, there's a good chance you probably could qualify as a rookie as well.
Yeah, if you haven't played before.
They changed the rules. I keep forgetting they changed the rules.
Every single year. So this year, you can't have been on a football list for the 3 years up until May 1st.
Okay.
So if you were signed by a state league club on May 2nd and played this season in the state leagues, you can be still signed as a rookie.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah. Whereas previously it was sort of... It could have been really anyone, wasn't it? There wasn't a lot of rules around it.
There was sort of... Especially in the first year, the rules were fairly fuzzy. And then last year it was under 21s qualified. There's still something a little bit up in the air as to whether people can be signed as a rookie on draft day if they're under 21.
I saw
that mentioned on the Lions website, but that is the only place I've seen it.
All right.
So I guess we'll find out eventually. But
but that signing
Welcome
period...
Welcome to loosey-goosey AFLW rules.
That period finished last Friday.
Yes.
That signing period, I should say, for the rookie listed players. And as we mentioned last week on our podcast, this Cross Coders organisation, which was sort of, spearheaded by the Bulldogs, sort of started as this niche kind of thing, which sort of like, flew under the radar for a few weeks, but then culminated last week into a Cross Coders team defeating a team full of some VFLW players.
Yeah, and comprehensively beating them by the sounds of it. If you go to Peter Holden's Twitter account, he's got a video there of some of the highlights from the match. And we've seen two of the Cross Coders from the program signed to AFLW lists in Eilish, I checked with my Irish friend.
Yeah.
Eilish Considine has gone to Adelaide. She plays Gaelic football and camogie, female hurling. We're all familiar with camogie.
Yep.
And the other one is Yvonne Bonner, which is possibly one of the most Irish names I've heard.
Yeah.
She's going to go to the Giants. She's another Gaelic player. And on the Giants website, they said that they can see her playing as a centre-half forward, which means Cora Staunton at full forward and Yvonne Bonner at centre-half forward, which is amazing.
That is cool.
Yeah.
The Irish, two Irish women up front.
Yes.
Which is pretty fun.
Yeah. And the Dogs still haven't announced their cross-coder rookie signing. And they were the ones who started the whole program. So
yeah,
they did have their best and
fairest
dinner last night. And I think they were just, you know, their media department had other things that they were dealing with.
They were a bit worried about things. They did sign Tessa Boyd a few weeks ago, sister of Tom Boyd. Yeah. So their second rookie is yet to be announced. We've spoken about North Melbourne's rookies, Taylor Roberts and Jesse Williams. Taylor, a basketballer, Jesse, a soccer player who was only signed probably 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, fairly recently.
Mm. Melbourne have signed Chantel Emmonson.
Yes, I had to check about five times, so there's no D in there. It's not Edmondson, it's Emmonson.
And she's been playing with Casey in the VFLW this year, so probably one of those ones who
just scrapes in.
Scrapes in by the signing date. Shay Sloan, the sister of Rory, has also been signed to Melbourne. That one was a few months ago.
Yeah, that was a while back. I really enjoyed writing that article up because it was like, Sloan to Melbourne, and then a whole lot of Adelaide fans had a heart attack. No, it's not Rory.
It's Shay. Don't worry. Taylor Davies is another one joining Yvonne at Greater Western Sydney. She's also part of the Giants netball side in the National League.
Yeah, I think she's a training player as opposed to an actual full member. I could be wrong.
But, I know what you mean, yeah.
Yeah, sign-on player for the Giants. But still, that means that she's a highly talented netballer because there's not many netball spots available
at
the top level.
They're not big squads, netball squads. But Geelong also have named their rookies, Maddie McMahon and Georgia Rankin as well. Maddie McMahon has played a very big role in the ruck for Geelong during their VFLW season. But I think my favourite thing about her story is that she wanted to try football earlier, probably two seasons ago or a season ago, but couldn't because she was having a third child.
Yeah, and she's 27, so good on you, Maddie.
Amazing.
As two 25-year-olds, we're sort of sitting there going, what have we achieved with our lives?
No kids for me.
No.
Not for a long time. So, thanks, Maddie.
Georgie Rankin, her great-great-grandfather played for the club. Teddy is also a club legend, so bringing it in the family. Geelong are the family club with
family
Mel Hickey.
Ties. Mel Hickey, of course.
And the Dockers. Take us through the Dockers.
Brianna Moyle. She played basketball for Perth Lynx in WNBL. She was identified through their club talent search.
Yes, yeah. And the best thing about Brianna, I haven't seen her play footy, so I'm sure she's an absolute star. But other than that, the best thing about Brianna is that she works on the docks in Fremantle.
Oh, she's an actual Fremantle Docker.
She is literally a Fremantle Docker.
That's
and
good.
It's worth signing her up for that alone.
That is true. And also Angelique Stannett, who is a former Perth Glory defender in the W League. So she was also signed up through the rookie talent search at Fremantle and at Collingwood.
We've already spoken about Collingwood
because there was the speculation about Shani Layton, and she's ended up there. And Sarah Rowe as well was a story that came out a few weeks ago, another Irish Gaelic footballer. And she's found her way onto the Collingwood rookie list. Carlton as well, they named their two rookie listed players a while back.
Yep. Chloe Dalton and Brooke Walker, both are rugby sevens players, but they've spent the year with the Blues in the VFLW.
And Brisbane yet to announce their rookies yet, but
Friday.
So you will hear the news on Friday, the 5th of October, which is...
Yes, we're recording Thursday night.
We're recording Thursday night. So you'll probably have heard about them by the time you listen to this. So it's all happening.
Yeah, and the one we haven't mentioned is Maisie Nankerville.
Oh.
Another netballer, really young netballer, only 18, is a train-on player with the Thunderbirds, and she's going to combine that with footy, as you do.
Awesome. So she'll be like Shani Layton and Ash Brazel.
Shani's not playing netball.
Oh, yeah.
There was a whole retirement thing.
She's come over here, of course. Yeah. Oh, my God. Just a lot happening. But, yeah, it's exciting to have these girls come over to the sport and, you know, find themselves on these AFLW lists. It's always good. I find girls who have backgrounds in other sort of, you know, professional sports always adapt really, really well because they've been a part of that elite environment before. They sort of know training expectations and all that jazz. So they seem to pick it up really well and really quickly. And it's always good to have a few more Irish women on board as well.
And there's nothing to stop players who weren't successful immediately out of the Crosscoders program nominating for the draft either. Yeah. So you may still see one or two filter through that way.
You may see our first American get drafted this year, which would
possibly maybe signed as a rookie by the Lions.
Oh,
just quietly. I've been doing a little bit of Instagram stalking, and
I know. Yeah,
just check the Lions AFLW who they've followed recently. And
The old Instagram follow, it strikes again.
Yes.
Oh, my God. I love it.
But I could be wrong.
Yeah.
Just saying, it's a possibility.
It's a possibility. It's the new way to break stories in the AFL media world.
Definitely. I picked that up from Mitch Cleary, who's, incredible at breaking stories. He's on social media all the time. Just like, oh, I've just seen that blah, blah, blah has happened. And that's a good tip.
Interesting moves there from the Brisbane Lions. So have your ear on the ground for that one, everyone, because that news seems imminent. But before we wrap up our podcast today, this big draft podcast.
Combine.
Draft combine.
Don't freak me out. The draft's still 2 weeks away.
Draft's 2 weeks away. Don't worry. But we have a few questions from listeners. One was, who has nominated for Geelong?
We don't know. That's the short answer. The nominations are kept private. Yeah. Which I think is a good thing.
Yeah.
So it's only if players announce it themselves who they're nominating for. The girls are pretty young. You don't want to be putting too much pressure on them. I think it might change in the future. We might have public nominations just because that's, just the continuing professionalism of the competition. But for now, we don't know. And on a personal level, I don't like to pressure players into announcing that because they might feel like they're upsetting their state body if they're deciding to move states.
Yeah.
So with Nina, for example, you would have heard I asked her, are you able to say it publicly?
Yeah.
That's just a personal thing. Some other journos might go a little bit harder than that.
Yeah.
But that's what I like to do. So at the moment, all we know is that Nina's nominated for Geelong.
Yeah. And Maddie's nominated for Metro.
Maddie's nominated for Metro. And we'll keep it at that. There was one I'm not sure about. I don't want to go public if I'm wrong.
Fair enough. But also another question about this sort of zone nomination, sort of grey area they've pointed out here. And it is, I'm fascinated by how Geelong tackles the draft. What's the point in taking Morrison with a high draft pick? Take a gun who is nominated for multiple regions, keep Morrison in the back pocket. Sure, there's prestige in being number one, but strategically, it makes sense to pick her last.
So that's not the back pocket of the field. That means just pick her late in the order.
Yeah.
I don't think we'll see Nina Morrison in the back pocket anytime soon.
No.
This is an interesting one because that, I think, in a bit more of a ruthless competition that's been around for a long time, that might happen. But I also feel that Geelong are pretty aware that they've been given a bit of an advantage here and they don't want to lose it by exploiting it, by doing something like that. There's a lot of – the AFLW is built on a lot of goodwill also between clubs, so they don't want to necessarily upset clubs by taking advantage of it in that sense. So we'll see Nina go at one or two.
Yeah, for sure. And, it's like the sportsmanship kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like you don't – as you said, they've been given an advantage – they don't want to, sort of be like take advantage of the advantage that they've been given.
Yes.
And, have it taken away because it is almost a privilege for Geelong to have this sort of thing. And without.
I'm not against Geelong having it. I think it's actually a really practical thing. I live 2 hours away from Geelong. Right on the outer eastern side of Melbourne. So if. And these girls are a lot younger than I am, some of them. So to be able to have to travel that distance to training every day isn't great in a part-time competition, especially when a lot of them are still at uni and work.
And I think, the pressure from players as well to get drafted alone is a lot. I mean, a lot of them would probably be putting a lot of pressure on themselves, especially the Victorian girls. And you don't want to think, I want to get drafted. Geelong really wants to draft me. But I don't want to go to Geelong. Not that I don't want to go to Geelong, but it's going to be really hard for me to go out to Geelong. It's going to be really disruptive. But if I say no, then maybe I won't make it at all.
Yes.
So it's sort of, that's then
something
that's
to weigh up.
Extra pressure on players. So if they can just say, well, I have interest from, say, another Metro club, I can just say Vic Metro and my life, I can be a bit calmer about this.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is also really nice because you have 18-year-old kids. Some of them are 18-year-old kids. And even as a, if you are one of those mature age recruits, you've probably got a job, you're probably studying, probably have things that you have to take into consideration when you're thinking about nominating for a particular area. So it makes sense. And it also makes sense that Geelong wouldn't want to lose that by, being shifty with the way they use it.
And they want their players to be able to play at their best capacity, which you know, would be stymied if they were having to travel really long distances and stuff. And it's not like the men where they're paid wages that they can move to Geelong.
Mm.
Like, for girls to... It's not feasible for girls to do that.
Yeah.
So, also, there's a just a... you know, slightly talented full forward coming through by the name of Lucy McAvoy, who the Cats will be eyeing off eagerly. She's a Geelong Falcon, so you wouldn't want to lose access to Lucy if she does indeed even choose to nominate for the draft in 2020. Mm.
So, yep, definitely a lot to consider there with that sort of little grey area, but I think we've probably made a bit more black and white for you.
Yes.
Now.
Or navy blue and white.
Oh, hey. Love it. But no, that wraps up the episode for today. A lot of speculation, really, from us here, but we can only tell you what we've seen and what we've heard.
It's a time of year for speculation.
That is true. Like,
trade radio has been playing all day at work. Yeah. You know, I hate all the ads off by heart.
I hate trade radio so much.
Well, so many of my co-workers are on it. That, you know, and it's also broadcasted through our platform. So, you know, I don't want to bag it too much.
True.
I do see the amount of work that goes into it.
Yeah, I probably shouldn't say that I hate it. I don't hate the actual product or anything. I just really dislike the speculation. And I said to you, I was like, I wish trade period was 3 days.
Yeah.
So it just happened.
Yep.
And it was done.
Yep.
And everyone was just went to their clubs and we all had a quiet off season.
Yes, that would be nice.
But it's that whole thing of, you know, the AFL wants to be year round and good on them.
Yeah.
You know, take up that space.
So just to finish off, I thought I'd give a quick pump up to our downloads. I think some people are under the impression that this is a much bigger podcast than it actually is.
No.
Our sort of average download rate is about 100 per episode. So only
and we're very happy
downloads.
With that, just putting it out there.
We are. For a startup pod produced in a, what is this, a university. It's not even
community
university.
Community
radio. Community radio. Yeah. You heard how horrible the audio quality was last week. We apologise so much for that. But the last episode we only had 82 downloads. So tell a friend.
Yeah. We have got more ratings on the podcast app. We're at 11 ratings now and a review.
And a few reviews. There's which is three reviews, actually.
Oh, my
God. There's some really nice ones. You're going to have to check them out. So thank you to the people who have left a review on iTunes. We really appreciate it. But, yeah, as we said, we'd love to grow this podcast, especially coming into the draft. Preseason will probably start mid-November. We don't really know. I would like to know. I would like to take a holiday at some point. So this podcast will only will have more to talk about.
Yeah.
So get your friends involved or your co-workers if you're working at an AFLW club. Hint, hint. We've just discovered the analytics page.
Yeah.
So if you're interested, most of our listeners come from Victoria. We do have a few interstaters. One from WA, shout out to that one download. We've also got a few internationals, 5 from the UK.
Love it.
2 from the US, 1 from Canada, and most exciting of all, 1 from Switzerland.
Oh, you know what I like to say about that? It's a big plus. Switzerland, their flag is a big plus. Oh, yeah.
Oh, no.
I went there.
The way you said it, there was sort of a pause until I actually got it, but you said it with such impact. I'm like, I know this is going to be horrible. And then once I got it, it was.
It was horrible. But you know what? I pride myself on my horrible puns, so I'm not even going to apologise for it. But, yeah, thank you so much. And, again, review, follow us on Twitter.
Twitter's the best way to contact us.
Yeah,
it's a bit awkward if you don't have a Twitter account. I'm sorry, but that's really our best source. Maybe we'll set up an email account.
I was about to say, maybe we will do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll get back to you on that one, but we probably will. Give us your anonymous tips.
Yes.
I love that.
Or don't.
Or just, you know, message, say hi. We love that.
Yeah. Give us some topics of conversation. Give us some questions.
Exactly.
Because
we love
questions.
It's sort
of a little bit lonely to put out a tweet going, any call, any questions, and we get none. So help out our self-esteem.
Help it out, guys. But thank you so much for listening to this huge episode of Credit to the Girls. We will be back in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah, probably on Thursday night. We're going to have to change our recording times.
Yeah. AFL season finishing, it's really, really messed us around.
Yeah.
More than in more ways than we possibly could have known.
So sorry.
So sorry for the disrupt in the schedule, but you'll probably be getting it earlier now, so how could you be mad about it?
Definitely. Really? Friday morning commute. Perfect.
We got you. Thanks again for listening. We will see you and we won't see you, but we'll speak to you in 2 weeks' time.